welcome to another episode of Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce, and I'm all alone in the studio today. Everybody else has abandoned me, but that's okay, because we've got a lot of stuff on track for you today. Today, we are talking about media impact and social change. So for those of you that have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about, that's talking about building communities and building social change when it comes to, major issues that hit us across the board. Whether that is, trying to be more green or, acceptance of LGBT, lesbians, gay, bi, trans community. So, the examples we're going to use today, probably more focus around the LGBT community, but the stuff that you find in today's show can be applied to any community whatsoever. We've got some fantastic stuff for you today, some amazing guests on track for you. Lindsay Wallstrom from Media Impact is on first, and we've got Cassandra from Rainbow Reels, and Terry from the Lesbian Film Festival, and Kathleen Holland from AWOL. And topping off the show today, we've got Dan Savage, who put together and invented the It Gets Better project that has gone absolutely viral on YouTube and everything else out there. So we've got for you, just to get off the top on the show, we're going to talk with Lindsay Wallstrom from Media Impact, who I caught up earlier, and she's talking about her company and how we can actually build campaigns to make these changes happen.
My name is Lindsay Wallstrom, and I'm the communications officer at Media Impact. What we do is we focus on entertainment education, and we've done a lot in the form of radio and TV. We've also used comic books and a variety of platforms. And really what we as an organization do is we focus on building the capacity of groups around the world to use these tools and to use this methodology to bring more awareness and more discussion around different social and environmental issues. We're actually working right now in a couple of schools in New York City, and we're working with podcasts and flip cameras with youth. We've done fully produced TV programs before in the past, mostly using the soap opera platform or the soap opera medium as a way of introducing these really taboo topics and topics that are often hard to create discussion around just because they're uncomfortable. It could be sexual health with youth. It's uncomfortable when you're 15 years old to be talking about these issues with your parents or talking about them with your teachers. And so the idea is to build on experiences, real life experiences from the community that people have gone through, whether it's a friend who, went through a teenage pregnancy or another friend who contracted an STI, because they just didn't have access to information. So turning those experiences into storylines in a drama that is used to create some dialogue. So each of the dramas is played as part of an hour long talk show. You play the drama and then have a special guest related to the theme of that day's episode. Or you might throw a question out to the actual break and come back and take phone calls, or have what we call a vox pop, where you pre-record people's reaction to a prompt and edit them together just to start generating that dialogue. And then the third part of the work that we do is using all of the drama and the dialogue that's been generated around that, create a community campaign that is used to just provide opportunities for people to really interact with the issues. So if you were dealing with environmental issues, it could be having a recycling day. So people can go and clean up their local river bed. It might be having a day where there's free STI testing or free HIV testing available, or just making condoms really easily accessible to youth. But the premise being that the community is the group that is identifying the issue, using local resources, local knowledge, local people to start generating some of these solutions, and then really driving the audience and the listeners to take action on a mass scale. And that's where the power of the of media comes in for us. Well, what we really do is we work with groups around the world, as I said, doing the training and mentoring. And so the first step is to really require the group to form a coalition. And by coalition, it would be a broadcast partner, an NGO, or a community-based organization that's been working in the area for a while. And then oftentimes we'll have local government or someone who more on the policy side. If it was a program about health, we would most likely have a health clinic or a doctor or some type of medical representative part of the program. I can use an example. Right now we're running a program in the Caribbean, which is a 12-country initiative. It's called My Island, My Community. And its media impact is one partner. And then the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, which is more of that government level, is another partner. And then we're working with more than 30 local NGOs and broadcast partners to produce this regional soap opera that's culturally relevant based on what's going on in the community, but that really addresses sustainable development as a whole. So it talks about health. It talks about issues of population. It talks about environment. It talks about economic integration in the region and creating job opportunities so that people have an alternative to their current jobs of, you know, cutting down trees and exporting the lumber or extracting petroleum. So it takes this holistic approach. And so that first step of bringing all of the actors to the table is what starts that, generating that dialogue that needs to happen that so often is just lacking from these campaigns. And then from there, representatives from each of the organizations will work together to write the scripts. They'll have community volunteers act as the actors. The broadcast partner will produce the drama. They'll have another couple of volunteers host the radio program. And then the campaign itself is produced by the local coalition. All of it is informed by significant formative research, which includes literature review. It includes focus groups to really make informed decisions about the best way to reach the target audience, what they find engaging. All of the materials are piloted through focus groups and adjusted accordingly. And then monitoring happens throughout to make sure that we're making the adjustments that need to happen to make the campaign the most effective that it can be.
And how effective are these campaigns, and how have you found them to work?
There's a couple of different levels of that. We measure on three levels. The first is building the capacity of local groups to produce this type of work. That is highly effective. It has been, you know, proven time and again with the groups who continue to produce these type of programs even after our involvement ends. Our number one goal is that these are sustainable programs and that this type of work can continue after our involvement ends. A few of the groups that we've worked with have gone on to consult for the Pan American Health Organization, for UNAIDS. One group is working with the government, the national government in Ecuador. They were recruited to work on a project about health. So that capacity does exist. The groups do continue to produce this type of content after relief. The second is building a community of people who support the issue, whether that be, sexual education in schools or recycling. And that is, again, we measure that through participation in community fairs, through increased access to services, through surveys, through focus groups and conversations with listeners. And again, those have proven to be very effective. Some of the groups have seen increases in access to services. In a national program we did in Peru, there was a more than 30% increase in access to services. All of that was attributed to the radio drama. In local programs, you'll have up to a 70% increase in services attributed to the radio program. And by local, I mean, we'll have programs that run regionally in the Caribbean, for example, and then a program that reaches maybe 10,000 people in Colombia. So it's very different skills that we're working on. And then the other level that we measure on is changes in audience knowledge, attitudes, and practices regarding the target issues. So that's predominantly measured through a quantitative survey that's administered a baseline and then a final assessment, so just measuring the change in that. The first such survey was done in Africa in the 90s, and the way that it was done is there was a program we ran in six communities, but it initially broadcasted in five of those six communities, and so 5 of the communities were hearing the broadcast on a regular basis, and the 6th community wasn't, simply because for some reason at that time of the day, the radio station signal didn't reach the 6th community. So for the purposes of the assessment, that was used as the control. There were differences of up to 70% in access to services and people using family planning methods and people believing that the use of condoms was a positive thing. This is a sexual health program, obviously, in Kenya. And then the 6th community later was exposed to the drama, obviously, for ethical reasons. But there was a significant change in that. We worked with Dr. Arvind Singhal, who's on our board of directors, but he originally started out at the University of Ohio, and he was doing the first analysis of this type of programming. We've been doing it for 25 years. So he started out doing these programs, measuring their impact in the 80s and through the 90s, and found them to be highly effective. The methodology was highly effective. So now what we do is we work with the community again to build that capacity of doing the monitoring and evaluation. And so we'll work with them to develop a pre and post assessment, which is administrated to a significant sample size in the community. And then we measure impact. We have a woman out of Mexico. She has her PhD in this work, and she does the actual statistical analysis, looking at the changes in knowledge, attitudes, and practices. Again, the impact is going to vary based on the community size, but if you're working in a large community, you'll expect to see, you know, impact in maybe 10% of the community, and then in the smaller communities, you can have an impact of up to 80-some percent and some knowledge. The attitudes and practices do take a little bit longer to implement.
Tell us, you've been around for 25 years. Tell us exactly, what does media impact do?
Media Impact is really a capacity-building organization. So our focus is to ensure that communities around the world are able to effectively use communications to turn up the volume on really important social and environmental issues. And that can be anything from gossip right now in New York City schools up to the impacts of climate change in the Caribbean, coastal management in Ghana, tiger conservation in Laos, and domestic violence in Chiapas, Mexico. Because we want the programs to be relevant, it's really community-based, really community-focused, and we'll even produce, right now we're producing the first ever Tzotzil radio drama in southern Mexico in Chiapas. So we'll work in local languages and make these programs effective and really empower communities to address their own issues and recognize that the answers often lie within the community, and it's just a matter of bringing all of those resources together and bringing the right people to the table to make things happen.
Thanks, Lindsay. That brings us a little bit up on how to use media and how to use that media to create social change. Some of the examples there, you know, STD and family planning in Africa and various different, you know, projects like that that are extremely effective. But bringing it back home here to Southwestern Ontario, one of the projects that's around is and has been around for a very long time is the Rainbow Reels Film Festival in Kitchener-Waterloo. And that is a film festival that started on campus there and has expanded to the general public, bringing, you know, the visibility piece, the community building piece, and the awareness piece around these issues. And I had the pleasure of talking to Cassandra Polyview from Queer Reels, and I have that for you now.
My name is Cassandra Polyview. I'm a coordinator at the Waterloo Public Interest Research Group, and that also includes coordinating the Rainbow Reels Queer Film Festival, which WPIRG puts on every year for the last 11 years.
Right off the top, when is the festival?
It's running from March 2nd to the 6th, so coming up soon, less than a week away. It's soon, and it's happening in Uptown Waterloo at the Princess Cinema.
Tell me about your film festival. How did it come to be?
So it started off 11 years ago just as a festival here at the University of Waterloo. So a bunch of students saw sort of this, you know, we don't have any outlet or any real, you know, kind of bringing together of films on queer experiences, on lives, documentaries, whether it's fiction or not. So they just they had some events here, some screenings. It was really small scale. And it's grown over the years. So probably about 5 or 6 years ago, it went out from being just on the campus to in the community. So they rented a theater in downtown Kitchener, and now it's moved to Uptown Waterloo to the Princess Cinema, which is a fairly large rep cinema here locally. So it's kind of jumped around a bit, and as the years go on, it just gets bigger and bigger.
How many films do you have this year?
This year we have 10 feature films and 10 shorts. So we did a call for submissions for shorts, and a pile came in, and we kind of had a selection process. One of our committee members went through and watched hours and hours of shorts from all over and picked 10 out of about 60. So that was a lot of work. And then we have about 10 feature films. One of the big things that this festival has been really proud of is that it's very grassroots, and that the committee really has been trying to make sure that people who select the films are not just a small, tiny group of people, but that the film selection goes out to a wide mailing list, and we invite people in. We got about 30 to 35 people to screen trailers, and they all voted on which films they would prefer to have in the festival. So that's sort of a big part of what makes this festival kind of unique. It's not just, paid staff or a board of directors that decides on, oh, these are the hot queer films of now, but it's people from the community, university students and community members who come out and vote on what gets into the festival. So that's pretty cool.
Can you tell me a little bit some of the highlights of your lineup for this year?
Yeah, for sure. For our gala, we chose The Mormon Proposition, which is a documentary about the Mormon Church's involvement in the promotion and passage of California's Proposition 8, which was a law basically saying only marriage between a man and a woman is valid in the state of California. So the Mormon Church has a lot of wealth and a lot of power, and this documentary really looks at that like with a magnifying glass, and it's it'll be really inspiring and thought-provoking as our gala film, and then we have a big party afterwards to kind of liven the mood. And then we have a great film by a local filmmaker, Melissa Skye, put together a documentary on KW's queer women. So she asked about 50 or 60 diverse women from KW three questions about who they are, their sexuality, and it's really charming and really funny, and it'll bring in a lot of people. I think a lot of people will like to see themselves up on the screen, so that's a big draw too. And we have this other great documentary called Two Spirits: Sexuality, Gender, and the Murder of Fred Martinez. And this one's it's a tragic story. It's a documentary about a young man who is murdered for being two-spirited. And this documentary also looks at the broader community of the indigenous community and how two-spirited people are treated and honored for integrating genders. It's a really cool look at how two-spirited people are viewed in indigenous cultures.
Where do people get tickets to this?
We have a couple locations. The Princess Cinema is one in Waterloo. Another one is Encore Records in downtown Kitchener, and the WPIRG office at the University of Waterloo. You can buy advance passes, and they're great prices. It's $34 for adult admission. You get into the gala event, the film for the gala. You get into all screenings. We have 10 feature films, a short program with 10 shorts from around the world, so it's a pretty good deal. If you're a student, it's $25 for the pass.
Do you have an online purchase option?
We don't right now. So what you can do is just call our office, and I'll put some tickets on reserve for you, and you can pay for them when you arrive.
Sounds like a great lineup.
Yeah, so and we have more.
You have more, and you have a website?
We do. It's rainbowreels.org. We have descriptions on all the films there. We have a couple of queer artists that are showcased in the gallery at the Princess Cinema, so their descriptions are up there. And we have more details if people need details about the ticket sales as well.
When is your gala event?
It's Thursday, March the 3rd. The film starts at 7 with some opening remarks. The mayor of Waterloo is going to come out and show her support for the community. And then we have the gala party, which is a big masquerade at 9 o'clock at the Princess Cinema.
Let's back up. Why do we have a queer film festival?
I think if you were to ask people who've come year after year, they would continuously say the word community. It's all about being able to come together on a topic, but also watch some art and some media that doesn't normally get exposed and doesn't normally get presented in our community. So the queer people don't tend to see themselves reflected in mainstream media. The Kids Are Alright, which was a big Hollywood movie that did deal with queer relationships. That's sort of what we got, right? Like, of the 20 or 30 or 40 Hollywood blockbusters that get put out in a season, you don't see queer characters. So this is a place where people can come together and see themselves on the screen. It's also a place where people can talk about things that totally don't just get pushed under the rug. So whether it's homophobia or racism or transphobia and how that affects people on a personal basis. It's a place where people can talk about it. So we provide discussion space after some of the screenings. So people will gather in a cafe afterwards or in a bar close to the Princess and have a discussion. So that's really what it is about creating community and also having space to discuss difficult and challenging things. Well, I think that if we don't discuss how we're different and how we are being oppressed as queer people, as people of race or people of disability, then we don't have a chance to try to change the system, to try to change our communities for the better. If we just all go out and watch Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie movies, that's all we get. All we get is action films. And we don't get anything that really pushes the boundaries in terms of making people who don't get exposed to, for example, queer cinema or documentaries or things about human rights, they just don't ask the questions of, well, how do you feel? How do you experience your life? Do you feel part of society? Do you feel like you're getting bullied? Do you feel like you have barriers in terms of being able to get employment because you're gay? Being able to share these experiences with each other really makes us able to create a society that is not just diverse in a superficial way or that we're accepting in a very superficial way, but able to actually allow people to feel comfortable and to combat oppression and injustice.
Thanks, Cassandra. That's wonderful. Film festival coming up next week. I know that my fiance and I will be there at the opening gala, and I'm ever so excited to be there and hear that and see that and see the opening film, which is the Proposition 8 thing, and the take on where the funding for that comes from. And I'm going to play the trailer for you for their gala event and what's coming up there. And I got to say that I don't usually give airtime to those that oppress other people. And I'm not into giving voices to the opposition, so to speak. But, I mean, as long as they're respectful and not hurtful, then they have a space in saying their piece here on Between the Margins. But when people get hurtful and closed-minded and they're not listening to both sides, then I don't tend to want to give them airtime. And some of the material in this trailer is their words, and definitely not the position of this show, the crew here, and everything else. But it's good to hear both sides of the story, and there's definitely both sides in this trailer.
Last month, the California Supreme Court made history by ruling for equality in marriage. We're going to make history.
What better day to get married than this historic day?
This young girl literally just ran up to me. She says, thank you for giving me two mommies.
As Deputy Marriage Commissioner, I now pronounce you partners in life. You may go.
They're probably the greatest threat to America I know of.
The gays.
Yeah.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is organizing the California proposition that defines marriage between a man and a woman.
The only way you can win any ballot measure is money.
The church had contributions made through their members.
This is how much you make. This is how much we think you can give, or you might lose your membership.
Mormons believe that their prophet literally is in communication with God.
There will be nothing that can defeat us.
If God puts in the scriptures that it's a sin to live that lifestyle, then he's not going to have them born that way.
Your equality is an illusion.
I can't believe that people could hate us this much. They don't even know us.
You're taking away my rights.
Shame on the homosexual community.
We know the voice of the Lord. When he wants us to do something, we know how to do it.
Gays interrupt the Mormon plan for heaven.
They have gone ahead to stop same-sex marriages.
I was disturbed by California becoming the first state to take rights away by changing its constitution.
The Mormons make up 2% of California, but accounted for over 71% of the contributions.
I find it just amazing, the church that's running as if they're a political action committee.
Who gave the money? How was it spent?
The Mormon church spent a lot more in non-monetary contributions than they reported.
I mean, we're talking Obama kind of money.
They were the man standing behind the curtain that you're not supposed to look at.
Do we have the same equal rights that you have?
Yes, we can! Yes, we can!
You're not just talking about the law. You're talking about people.
Justice!
This is about making a stand for what is right.
This is simple. This is just love.
And if that doesn't make you want to come out and support the Rainbow Reels Festival in Kitchener next week, I don't know what will. So come on out and enjoy the films. I know I'm going to be there and having fun with my fiancé. So the thoughts in that picture just are so loud and piercing. And to, you know, when you're a queer person and you hear people telling you that you should die, that's really difficult to hear from fellow man who is supposed to be accepting and loving. So, you know, we've got a long way to go, but these festivals have a great place in building community where we can go out and be with other people that are like-minded in warm and fuzzy, comfortable space. And one of those spaces that is coming up here in London, I know we talk a lot about trans issues here on the show. Well, tomorrow night, 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., there at the London Intercommunity Health Center, there's a free transgender, trans information night for friends and family, allied partners, loved ones, people, coworkers, anybody that has a trans person in their life or has trans people as clients and they want to learn more about the whole trans experience in a positive way. There'll be information and a workshop. I will be speaking at that event, so come on out, 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. It's free at the London Intercommunity Health Center. And Between the Margins will be back after these few short messages.
We are all in this.
And welcome back to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. It's the show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. And my name is Michelle Boyce, and we are talking about community building and social change through media impact and the power of video presentations. And And we talked earlier on in the show with Cassandra from Rainbow Reels and Lindsay Wallstrom from Impact Media, who filled us in on how this stuff can come about and how it can build communities and make social change. So another festival here within the City of London is the London Lesbian Film Festival that they're having their 20th anniversary this year. And to give you some background on the festival itself, I had the pleasure of talking to Terry Brandt.
My name is Terry Hart, and I am the coordinator of the London Lesbian Film Festival. This year is our 20th anniversary, so we've gone a little bit bigger this year. What we do is we have 3 days of films, and we've been at Rainbow Cinemas for quite a few years. Traditionally had an opening reception on the Friday night after the films, and then we've always had a dance on the Saturday. And this year we have the Dukes of Drag coming down from Montreal, and they're going to perform for about an hour before our dance on the Saturday. And then on the Sunday before the films, we've partnered up with the Delta London Armories. They're one of our corporate sponsors this year. And we're having a breakfast buffet there. And as well, we've got U.S. comedian Dana Goldberg coming up and performing at the buffet. So all the films on Friday and Saturday are women only or women identified people. And on Sunday, our films are open to everyone. It's our community day. So, you know, you can bring your 14-year-old and you can bring your grandfather. Everyone's welcome on Sunday to the films. All our extracurricular activities and events are all women only. So the reception on Friday night and our dance and our Sunday buffet are women only. We've got a website, and it's www.llff.ca, and that lists all our events. The film lineup, as I said, won't be on the website until the second half of March.
Thanks there, Terry Hart. And the London Lesbian Film Festival this year will be on April 15th, 16th, and 17th, and it includes way more than just the films. It includes dance and all kinds of different events. So hopefully the community can come out and enjoy some great films and some great camaraderie between the community and hook up with old friends. And we talk about old friends, one of my good friends and long-term community members is Kathleen Holland, who she runs Adventurous Women of London, which is a fantastic resource to find out about women's events that are happening here in London. And she puts out a monthly newsletter that is absolutely fantastic, and her dedication to the community over the past 20-25 years has been bar none, unrelenting, and she is a huge member of our community, and she's got a few words about the London Lesbian Film Festival from her perspective.
I'm Kathleen Holland. I have been the coordinator for most of the 20 years that AWOL has been in existence. It's a social group for women. It was established in 1990, and just last year we celebrated our 20th anniversary.
Have you been going to the Lesbian Film Festival for the last 20 years?
Yeah, actually, probably since almost the beginning, I've been a participant of the Lesbian Film Festival.
And why is the Lesbian Film Festival important to the community?
I think it's really important because there are different folks who are at different stages of coming out and self-acceptance, and I think it means different things to different folks. For somebody like myself who's been involved in the community for probably in excess of 20 years, maybe closer to 25 years, it gives me an opportunity to run into the familiar faces that I might not otherwise see except in that setting, in that venue. For people who are maybe new to the city, well, it's a great spot for them to come out and make connections with women that are a part of their community that they haven't yet met. And for people who are just embarking on their sexual orientation discovery pathway, it gives them a chance to perhaps meet people who are very much like them.
What about the exposure to culture by non-community members?
So those that are not part of the community are welcome to the forum, as are all of the lesbians who come out to the Lesbian Film Festival. So what it does is it helps to normalize what their perception might have been if they're not really exposed to lesbian friends and, you know, being in settings where lesbians are maybe more inclined to gather. So it's really good, because I remember one in particular. It was a movie that showed many years ago, and it was two women who wanted to get married to each other. And that was a really moving portrayal of the same sort of struggles they would have gone through as a heterosexual couple that I happened to have brought a straight friend that year, and she was really moved by the way it's so similar. But then you're dealing with a same-sex couple, and so I think it helps to broaden their perspective that we go through the exact same things as a heterosexual couple may go through.
Through the years, what have been some of the most memorable experiences you've had at the festival?
Some of them are the films that really are humorous and have represented individuals who are like me, you know? So everybody can sort of relate to some of the characters in the shorts, the films that are maybe just a few minutes long. And then there are the really wonderful stories, there might be love stories, that, you know, you don't often get to see. We are fortunate that in this day and age, 2011, we are getting to see more and more of this in mainstream media, in movie theaters. But it's wonderful, and that's what it represented for probably the last 20 years. As I know they are celebrating their anniversary this year, that for many years when we didn't see love stories or stories that portrayed different factions of our community up on the big screen, it gave us a chance to sort of feel like, oh, my God, this film is speaking to me.
Having been in the community for as long as you have, what would you say to the young, or maybe not so young, person out there that is struggling with their sexual orientation, and they might feel that they're attracted to the same sex and a woman? What would you say to them to get them to come out to the festival?
The really, really important underlying message of coming out to a community-based event like the Lesbian Film Festival is to come out and be with your own. Be out with people who are understanding, compassionate, and have gone through the same sorts of struggles, likely. Not everybody goes through those struggles, interestingly enough, because some people, they might be born knowing their sexual orientation is different from the way that the rest of the world perceives it should be, which is heterosexual. So if anybody is struggling with that sort of identity, come out. Come out to the festival. Meet people that you will immediately feel comfortable with, because, as I say, they will have had the same sort of maybe struggle or the same sort of experience of having the hardship of coming out to family, coming out to other loved ones, friends, people they were afraid of being, people they were afraid might reject them for their sexual orientation. We've all gone through that. And so that's one way in which we can come out to the Lesbian Film Festival and know, oh, my God, there's a room full of other people who understand this.
How do people get in touch with AWOL?
The best way to get in touch with me regarding AWOL, so that you might be added, if you choose to our monthly newsletter, is you can phone me, 519-471-2177, or simply send me an email. And that way I can quickly add you. My email address is hollandkm@rogers.com.
Thanks, Kathleen. And come on out in April to the Lesbian Film Festival and partake in all of the festivities there. So we've been talking about film festivals and how they build community and they build awareness and all of that good stuff. But there's another side to using multimedia and videos, and I don't think that we can have a better example of that than the It Gets Better project that was created last fall in response to the LGBT youth suicide rates that seemed to just explode onto the media scene. And you can actually catch, we've got a whole show on that issue in our podcasts at www.betweenthemargins.ca. But the creator of that project is a man, and his husband or partner, Dan Savage, who created the It Gets Better project. And the project has gone viral across the internet, and we've had the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, all of the Canadian opposition leaders have all created them, minus our Prime Minister, who I'm not sure cares about Canada. Oops, that was my comments. Sorry about that, Mr. Harper. But I digress. It Gets Better has made a world of difference in a world of youth lives, and it has helped save lives through the use of multimedia. And I've got Rick Mercer's example, where he produced one of these It Gets Better projects, and then we'll get right to the interview with Dan Savage.
So last week was National Bullying Awareness Week in Canada. Now, for those of us long out of school, it's very tempting to treat that one like National Nutrition Week and just ignore it altogether. But unfortunately, if you Google bully Canada and suicide, you'll get more hits than if you were searching for Paris Hilton and hotel room. So we're not talking about just one or two horror stories here. We're talking about hundreds. And the more you read these stories, the more you realize the greatest thing about being an adult is that no matter how bad things get, you never have to go to grade 9 ever again. Because for a lot of kids out there, going to school doesn't rank up there as the best days of their life. No, because they're different in some way, they look at it like some sort of prison sentence. And you can't blame them, really. I mean, you walk in the door when you're 5 years old, they keep you for 12 years, you're not allowed to leave. Cripes, in this country you do less time for murder. Now, of course, the minute you leave school, you immediately forget how bad it can be for some people. But you want to say to these kids who are being bullied, you know what? You're right. These are not the best days of your life. In fact, these are probably the worst. But after this, they get better. And then, believe it or not, they get great. Trust me, I'm one of the smartest guys I know. And if you're being hassled because you're a geek, believe me, in a few years, you will inherit the earth. The biggest geek I went to school with was 76 pounds. He got hassled every day. The poor guy, he couldn't walk up a flight of steps without falling over to the left or getting a nosebleed. I have no idea how he got through it. In hindsight, he is the bravest man I know. And these days, he's as happy as Larry. He runs a video game company in California. If I had his money, I'd burn mine. And if you're being harassed in school because you're gay, believe me, in a few years, you will have more friends than you know what to do with. You can be as open as you want. You'll be the funniest guy in the room. And plus, when you fly standby in Air Canada, you'll get a free upgrade to business class because the guy behind the counter, he's gay too. So if you're being bullied in school because you're different, please tell someone about it. Remember, even in a real prison, eventually everyone gets parole.
And that gives you an example of what an It Gets Better video may look like. And here I caught up with Dan Savage a couple of weeks ago when he was speaking at the University of Windsor. Can you tell me just briefly why you started the It Gets Better project?
Well, it was last summer I read about the suicide of Justin Aberg, and then in September I read about the suicide of Billy Lucas in Greenberg, Indiana, and had the reaction that so many gay, lesbian, bi, trans adults have when we hear about LGBT youth suicide. It's just, I wish I could have talked to that kid. I wish I could have told him that however awful it is, you know, at this stage of his life, don't end your life now, because things do get better as you get older and grow up and have more autonomy and freedom. You get out of middle school and out of high school, and your family will come around. But of course, I couldn't talk to that kid. I would never get permission or an invitation to talk to high school students. And that was just sort of rattling around in my head, that I wouldn't get permission to talk to these kids. And it occurred to me that in the YouTube era, I didn't need permission to talk to these kids, reach out to them and tell them that it would get better. So after the suicide of Billy Lucas, I went home and asked my boyfriend if he would make a video with me and we could talk, you know, not just about bullying, because kids who are being bullied know what being bullied is like, but talk about our lives now and why we're so grateful to have survived that part of our lives, and share our joy with these kids. Because I really feel that when, you know, a 13, 14, 15-year-old gay kid kills himself, what he's saying is they can't picture a future with enough joy in it to compensate for the pain he's in now. And I thought it would be helpful if LGBT adults, not just celebrities, we didn't even ask celebrities to make videos, just regular, average, everyday, ordinary LGBT adults shared their joy with LGBT kids who were suffering and in pain and were having a hard time picturing the future.
What do you say to the people that are producing It's Getting Better videos instead of the It Gets Better?
I think that's great. You know, there's also Make It Better videos. The It Gets Better videos are all over the map. There are people saying, hang in there and wait, and it will get better. And there are people saying, even on It Gets Better videos, here's what I did to cope. Here's what I did to make it better in my school. You know, I've got videos from kids who started GSAs, and, you know, it is getting better. One of the things that I keep pointing out is, it's not a dire situation for all LGBT kids everywhere. It really depends on where you are and what your particular circumstances are. But in a lot of ways, there's never been a better time to be a gay, lesbian, bi, or trans kid than right now. If you are living in a place where your school has a GSA, where your friends are supportive, where there's an anti-bullying policy in place enforced by the administration, and you have the support of your family, there's never been a better time to be an LGBT kid than right now. But if you're living in a place where school administrators are bigoted, or you're going to a private Christian school, there isn't a GSA, and your family is bullying you, in some ways there's never been a worse time to be an LGBT kid than right now. But yeah, it's absolutely getting better. My life has proved that it's getting better. You know, when I came out to my mom 25 years ago, I wasn't just telling her that I was gay and was, a guy who slept with guys. I was telling her I would never get married, I would never have children, I'd never be a Marine. Coming out as gay then meant, you were really a huge amount of, adult life and adult possibility were closing for you because you were choosing, to be out and live with some integrity. But really, you were also and have to let go of, most other people's, even your own dreams about your adult life. And just in my lifetime, I am married. I have children. Now I can be a Marine if I want to, but I don't, but I won't, but I could be a Marine. So, even in my lifetime, it's gotten better, and it's going to continue to get better.
You've got to have never anticipated this project going this far.
No, I didn't. I put it in my column and I put it on my podcast hoping to get about 100 videos from 100 or so Savage Love readers, my audience, speaking bluntly, as I do, to LGBT kids about their futures and their lives and their joys. And I, hoped that I would have this resource where when I heard from LGBT kids who were suffering and who were despairing, I could direct them to these videos and say, here's some testimony from adult LGBT people from all walks of life. Here are 100 videos. Now we're, approaching 7,000 or 8,000, 9,000 videos and more than 30 million views and videos from the, President of the United States, Prime Minister of Great Britain, still waiting on one from Stephen Harper. And more importantly, LGBT people from all walks of life, all races, religions, backgrounds, classes, telling these kids that indeed it gets better. I'm just flabbergasted and overwhelmed.
It's got to be a great feeling.
It is a really good feeling. And if it was just that, like all these videos, that's a great feeling. What's really great is hearing from kids who watched the videos and have been helped, hearing from people who made videos, and then people reached out to them via their YouTube accounts that they created to post their own videos, and hearing directly from LGBT kids who are in the circumstances that they themselves once were. You think about the Mormon guy who put up the video. We heard from all sorts of closeted Mormon teenagers who was able to give them really good, solid advice about how to cope, how to get through it, how to speak to your family when you're ready to, how to come out to them, the resources to direct them to. And then hearing from parents, most heartbreakingly of all, for me as a parent, hearing from parents whose kids were being bullied, who've been sitting down at the computer with their kids to watch these videos, and their kids taking that opportunity to come out to their parents and ask them for their support. That's makes me cry every time I think about it.
Many of these videos make me cry. I've spent a lot of hours sitting in front of It Gets Better videos, bawling my eyes out. I'm sure you're no different.
Yeah. Me too. The first couple of weeks when it took off, we got more than 1,000 videos in the first week. It was just my husband and I alone watching each one before we posted it all the way through because we didn't want someone to say all the right things for 8 minutes and then go out, you know, say now I'm ex-gay and go off on a bullying tangent, you know, sucker punch some poor kid who watched the video. So we felt obligated to watch each one all the way through to vet it before we put it on the channel. There were many times I was sitting in cafes, in restaurants, just sitting all day watching videos and sobbing and crying because so many of them are so moving. And so beautifully done, and people found just the right words. You know, my boyfriend and I, we watched the one we made, the first one, and it's so awkward and herky-jerky, and it's so, you know, it gets better 1.0. It was like we created this genre, and other people have perfected it, and so, you know, you watch these videos, they're so affecting and so moving. And I'm just really proud that my husband and I unleashed this on the world. That we, you know, when you think about it, gay adults for the longest time, the deal for us was, you know, you're ours to torture until you're 18. Once you're 18, once you're an adult, you can do what you want. You come out, you can move away, and we can't hurt you anymore, really. And you're free. The only thing you're not allowed to do once you're 18 is talk to the kids we're torturing right now. If you attempt to reach out to those kids, we'll accuse you of being a pedophile, accuse you of recruiting. And so we didn't, you know, gay and lesbian adults, we didn't talk about what we'd been through, and we didn't talk to or reach out to these kids. And really, It Gets Better destroyed that, that idea that as LGBT adults, we don't have a right to speak to LGBT kids. And now LGBT adults all over the world are talking directly to LGBT kids using viral, videos and social, networks. Whether or not their parents want us to talk to them, whether or not their preachers want us to talk to them, whether or not their teachers or peers want us to talk to them, we're talking to them. And it's really the old order, the old deal has been completely shattered.
An amazing project. And the major controversy that I think that I've ever seen about it is what do you say to the people that it didn't get better?
Well, life is, you know, somebody sent me an email saying, oh, yeah, Harvey Milk really got better for him, didn't it? And, you know, Harvey Milk died in a really tragic and violent way, but he made a huge contribution. And, you know, all of our lives at some point must end. And I've heard from people who are in some, you know, pretty dire circumstances saying it didn't get better. And I've written back to a few saying, really, it's as bad now as it was in middle school when you had no autonomy, when you had no control, when you couldn't make choices and decisions to fix it for yourself. It's as bad now as it was then. And they've had to admit that it's not true, that, you know, even if you're going through a rough patch now, it's certainly better than it was in middle school when you're completely helpless. It Gets Better doesn't mean life is perfect. It doesn't mean you're going to win an Oscar and marry Brad Pitt. It means that, it gets better for us as individuals. And also collectively as a community, it's gotten better, and there's been a lot of progress. And, you know, for most of us, the experience is that our families come around, and that gets better. But, you know, in some cases, you know, not everybody looks to their life and is filled with joy. But still, I don't think it's illegitimate to give kids hope. And since I think for the overwhelming majority of us, if we're honest, looking back at our lives, whatever challenges we're facing as adults, we can say honestly that our adult life is certainly better than whatever it was we were going through in middle school as closeted gay, lesbian, bi, or trans teenagers. I think the project has validity and something to contribute.
And I think you're absolutely right. And it's been wonderful talking to you, Dan, and from the bottom of my heart, thanks for everything that you've done for all of these youth. I'm not just a radio host. I also work very closely with trans youth here in London, Ontario, and LGBT youth going through struggles. And you've given a lot of hope to a lot of those kids. And thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, thank you. And if I could add, I'm really, really thrilled with all the videos that have been made by trans adults. Because it is the gender nonconforming kids, whether they're gay, lesbian, bi, or trans, it's the gender nonconforming kids who suffer the worst in middle school and high school, particularly the trans kids, so that there are all these trans adults who now have this avenue to reach out to kids who are, you know, even more isolated than just a gay or lesbian kid might be, but trans, really isolated. I'm really proud of that and really happy about it.
And thank you very much, Dan, and all of our guests, Lindsay Wallstrom, Kathleen Polyview, Terry Hart, Kathleen Holland, and Dan Savage for spending the time with me and talking about this wonderful issue and getting the word out there for these festivals in the city and doing great things like the It Gets Better project. You can catch this podcast and all of our podcasts at www.betweenthemargins.ca, and have yourselves a healthy day.